For more on this, let's now cross live to Patrick Henningsen, independent journalist and founder of the news website 21st Century Wire. Mr. Henningsen, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, great to be with you.
So the U.S. has taken out Maduro. What do you foresee happening next in Venezuela? Who will assume control over the country?
Well, right now, the vice president has taken to the media and assured people that the government is still in position. Of course, their leader has been abducted by the United States. But the government is still in power, still functioning. The risk here is that this isn't over. This is only the opening act by the U.S. and by the CIA. And I'm sure the next phase of this regime change operation will be to sow instability, to sow social unrest, and they'll be deploying opposition, protests, etc. And this will come at some point very soon. And then that will be coalescing with global media coverage. And of course, at that point, they'll be sort of demanding that this government step down under pressure. So like the U.S. and its allies did with the Arab Spring in many different countries, in Iran, et cetera, throughout Eastern Europe, that this tactic is very, very straightforward. So the United States has great form in this respect. But the danger here is that this operation could very easily careen into a civil war in Venezuela. And that would be very unfortunate if that happened, because this is also going to mean that they could face, a tremendous loss of life, complete fracturing of society. And of course, this is going to be even worse for the economy. But the worse the economy gets in Venezuela, this is good news for Washington, because then they use this to make their case that the government must go. The regime must go. Maduro must go, because look how he's mismanaging the economy. What they don't tell you in the U.S. is that Venezuela has been under brutal sanctions, brutal economic warfare at the hands of the United States, unilateral sanctions now for a very, very long time, well over a decade, two decades, in fact. So that's the part that they always leave out, the currency warfare, the sanctions, the embargo that prevents the country from selling its oil, from refurbishing, modernizing its energy infrastructure so that it can produce more, so that it can make more money on the global market. And this is what the U.S., through its policy of sanctions and currency warfare, has sought to prevent. And they want to create economic pressure in the hopes that this will create social unrest and discontent, and the people will rise up and demand regime change. This is a policy that people in America and their allies believe works. They're now trumpeting the success of this tactic after 15 plus years of sanctions against Syria, and they're saying this was successful because we eventually removed the regime. But they created a wave of abject poverty in countries like Syria through the economic warfare and sanctions. And so many people have been, plunged below the poverty level as a result, starvation, death. That's been the result of sanctions. The governments still go to work after sanctions are imposed on a country. The state still needs to get up and run the country every morning. Sanctions are an act of war, but they target the population, not necessarily the government. And so this is the part that always gets mischaracterized. But sanctions are seen as an ethical way to wage war by the Western public. They think this is a bloodless policy that somehow helps to pressure or coerce a government into compliance. But in reality, it's devastating for the people of the country. So this is, again, a tactic that we have analyzed and that we've seen many, many times before around the world. And here we're seeing it again. But this is more extreme, because this is the first time, in at least in many people's memory, that the United States has gone to abduct. Or let's be clear what happened here. This is an act of extraordinary rendition by the United States. It's completely extrajudicial. This is nothing to do with the rule of law. It's against U.S. law. It's against the United States Constitution, against international law. And even worse, it violates treaty law on such a fundamental level because why would countries enter into any extradition agreement with the United States, if this is how the U.S. conducts its so-called justice internationally? I mean, it's a really dangerous precedent, really, for the international system.
Yes, it definitely does sound quite contradictory. Now, speaking of social unrest, as you just mentioned, do you think the U.S. will continue with a ground operation into Venezuela?
At this point, I wouldn't rule it out, because they've already broken all the rules in terms of law and precedent here. So I wouldn't rule out ground forces. Probably the United States have special forces already deployed in Venezuela in many different positions. That's almost certain. Mm-hmm. Certainly the CIA do. And as they have done in Ukraine or in Russia and other countries, the U.S. could be deploying terrorist attacks to blow up oil facilities, to attack military, to attack police stations. This is something the United States has done many times before, many, many, many times. And this is also to create division, to create panic, to force the state to act with a heavy hand in a state of emergency. And that feeds into the narrative that the, quote, regime is ruling with an iron fist, et cetera, and that's how that gets translated into the Western and global media. So I think certainly there are U.S. operations on the ground right now. What they do, how they're deployed in the coming days and weeks, certainly the goal from the U.S. is to sow unrest. It's to sow destabilization. That's absolutely their goal. And they want to create a situation where it'll give the impression internationally that justifies further heavy-handed U.S. actions, be they overt or covert, in order to remove the government from power in Caracas. That's the ultimate goal of the Trump administration. So, of course, this flies in the face of all international law and norms, and even U.S. law, for that matter. But this is exactly where we're at. It's a hugely dangerous place for Venezuela, for Latin America as a whole, and really for the United States internationally, because its credibility and reputation is now really in a very, very difficult position. They will not be able to walk this back. This is worse than under the Nixon administration, and when Henry Kissinger ordered Augusto Pinochet to scramble jets to attack the presidential palace in Santiago, Chile on September 11th, 1973, assassinating the president of that country in his government residence in order to enact regime change and take over the resource assets of that country. I mean, this is on par, I think even worse than that. This is such a brazen move by the United States. It's quite breathtaking.
And you just mentioned that the goal is to overthrow the government. Well, what is the strategy here then? Is it just to abduct Maduro, or is the strategy to install perhaps a new government? And how difficult could that be?
Yes, yeah. The first phase would be, what it done is to render the head of state, to abduct, to kidnap. They're saying to arrest. I mean, if the U.S. actually had evidence of narco-terrorism or any evidence that Nicolas Maduro was the head of a drug cartel, this would have been all over the global media by now. I mean, this would have been circulated around the world 10 times over. But as yet, they haven't released any of it because they clearly do not have any evidence. What they probably are basing their arrest warrant or their so-called indictment is probably cooked up intelligence, probably Israeli intelligence about Hezbollah. And we've seen this talking point coming from Netanyahu that Hezbollah and Hamas are active in Venezuela. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous on such an incredible, astonishing level. How this would get traction in U.S. politics today is quite unbelievable. Most people laugh at it, but this is the basis for the so-called emergency in Washington. There's that, plus the narco-terrorism or the narcotics trafficking charges. I mean, there is no evidence, even according to the U.S., their own drug enforcement agency. Venezuela is not even in the Premier League of drug producing countries in Latin America. So certainly it's not a threat to the United States. So it's to remove Maduro. And very crucially, what they've done is they've also kidnapped his wife. And the reason they've done that is very clever, because they know that as a female, that she would be a face of defiance if they had taken just him. And to have a female face of defiance standing up for her husband would be a very bad look for Donald Trump in the United States. This is why they've also arrested her. And they didn't want to, they want to create contrast between the CIA asset, Maria Corina Machado, longtime U.S. asset, longtime USAID funded. This is no secret, by the way. So, I mean, they want to create contrast between her as this angelic female champion of democracy. They rigged the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, me saying that, that's not a pejorative. It's clearly a farce, the Nobel Peace Prize. They've given it to somebody that's calling for military action against her own country, calling for the bombing and removal of a government by violent force, even inviting other countries, third countries like Israel, in addition to the United States, to somehow oust the government. I mean, this is the last person you'd ever give a Nobel Peace Prize to, but it shows you how corrupt the Nobel organization is and how deeply it's been penetrated by U.S. interests, U.S. influence, Israeli influence as well. And those are all the people and parties that lobbied for her to get the prize. So they wanted to position her as the next Juan Guaido, as this female, you know, angelic champ, Joan of Arc type figure for Latin America. But very few people in Latin America are buying it. They know it's a complete sham. But they need to do this because the object here is to remove the entire government. They want to purge the Venezuelan government of any socialist or left-leaning individuals. So this is the long-term objective of the U.S. And they could do this, not necessarily getting a majority in Venezuela, but getting enough of a minority with U.S. money, U.S. media clout and support, with the U.S. military threatening the country. And they create a sort of a position where people want the pain to stop. Then there's, you know, waving the carrot of opening up oil markets after shutting Venezuela out, lifting sanctions, financial aid packages. And this is how the coercion is carried out against these countries. So they repress them, they destroy their economy, and then when the country's on their hands and knees, on their last leg, then the U.S. comes waving gifts and carrots that, you know, are basically promising to lift the boot off the neck of the people of Venezuela. And at some point, there is an exasperated section of society, probably the middle class, probably the moderate middle class, the bourgeois class, of course, will be cheering on this attack by the United States. The bourgeois sort of upper class, the elite of Venezuela, who see themselves as the elite, the right wing factions as well, they'll be cheering on Trump. And this includes Democrats in America. You know, the Democratic Party also mobilized these same forces when they have put economic pressure in the past and called for regime change in Venezuela. So this is a bipartisan project in the United States. Joe Biden also applied heavy pressure on Venezuela, did not recognize its elections, etc. Trump 1.0 tried two failed coups against Venezuela and was hugely embarrassed, which is part of one of the reasons why Trump is so desperate to get a win here, because it was such a debacle and embarrassment in his first term with Venezuela. And of course, all of this aggression began under the Obama administration. But it's come to a level now that nobody could ever have conceived before, because it's the U.S. destroying any vestiges of any observance of any international norms or international law, or U.S. law for that matter. So this is a dark road that the U.S. is heading down right now.
And, well, speaking of this dark road, well, apparently Maduro and his wife, now they're on their way to New York where they will go on trial. And New York actually allows the death penalty upon a conviction for terrorism. So what do you think the plan is? Do you think the U.S. could actually execute Maduro?
No, I mean, if that was the case, they would surely make a martyr out of him that would embolden and probably energize left-wing political movements throughout not just Latin America, but, you know, the entire world, the entire global South, because this is really sending a message to the rest of the world saying, look, this is really kind of a mafioso foreign policy that the U.S. is running here. And basically they can come in and snatch or assassinate or kill any leader that doesn't submit to U.S. corporations coming in to rape, pillage, and plunder their natural resources. It kind of comes down to that. These are the sovereign assets of the country of Venezuela. It's oil, it's minerals. It's not U.S. property. This is what happens. I mean, the Republicans, it's so funny that the MAGA movement will always say one of their big tropes politically, domestically, is, oh, elections have consequences when they talk about the Supreme Court justices and so forth. Well, in countries, elections also have consequences. Is that if certain governments come into power and there's been, you know, an unfair and imbalance in terms of the wealth gap, in terms of state management or state ownership of critical infrastructure or industries versus U.S. private foreign ownership.
We'll have to stop this just right here for a moment as Donald Trump has started to hold his press conference. We'll be joining you shortly again. Donald Trump is holding a press conference following the U.S. strikes in Venezuela. Let's listen in.
The United States Armed Forces conducted an extraordinary military operation in the capital of Venezuela, overwhelming American military power, air, land, and sea, was used to launch a spectacular assault. And it was an assault like people have not seen since World War II. It was a force against a heavily fortified military fortress in the heart of Caracas to bring outlaw dictator Nicolas Maduro to justice. This was one of the most stunning, effective, and powerful displays of American military might and competence in American history. And if you think about it, we've done some other good ones, like the attack on Soleimani, the attack on al-Baghdadi, and the obliteration and decimation of the Iran nuclear sites just recently in an operation known as Midnight Hammer, all perfectly executed and done. No nation in the world could achieve what America achieved yesterday, or frankly, in just a short period of time. All Venezuelan military capacities were rendered powerless as the men and women of our military, working with U.S. law enforcement, successfully captured Maduro in the dead of night. It was dark. The lights of Caracas were largely turned off due to a certain expertise that we have. It was dark. And it was deadly. But captured along with his wife, Celia Flores, both of whom now face American justice. Maduro and Flores have been indicted in the Southern District of New York, it's Jay Clayton, for their campaign of deadly narco-terrorism against the United States and its citizens. I want to thank the men and women of our military who achieved such an extraordinary success overnight with breathtaking speed, power, precision, and competence. You rarely see anything like it. You've seen some raids in this country that didn't go so well. They were an embarrassment. If you look back to Afghanistan, or if you look back to the Jimmy Carter days, They were different days. We're a respected country again, like maybe like never before. These highly trained warriors operating in collaboration with U.S. law enforcement caught them in a very ready position. They were waiting for us. They knew we had many ships out in the sea, just sort of waiting. They knew we were coming. So they were in a ready, what's called a ready position. But they were completely overwhelmed and very quickly incapacitated. If you would have seen what I saw last night, you would have been very impressed. I'm not sure that you'll ever get to see it, but it was an incredible thing to see. Not a single American service member was killed, and not a single piece of American equipment was lost. We had many helicopters, many planes, many people involved in that fight. But think of that, not one piece of military equipment was lost, not one service member was more importantly killed. The United States military is the strongest and most fearsome military on the planet by far, with capabilities and skills our enemies can scarcely begin to imagine. We have the best equipment anywhere in the world. There's no equipment like what we have. And you see that even if you just look at the boats, you know, we've knocked out 97% of the drugs coming in by sea. 90%. Each boat kills 25, on average, 25,000 people. We knocked out 97%. And those drugs mostly come from a place called Venezuela. We're going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. So we don't want to be involved with having somebody else get in, and we have the same situation that we had for the last long period of years. So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. And it has to be judicious, because that's what we're all about. We want peace, liberty, and justice for the great people of Venezuela. And that includes many from Venezuela that are now living in the United States and want to go back to their country. It's their homeland. We can't take a chance that somebody else takes over Venezuela that doesn't have the good of the Venezuelan people in mind. We've had decades of that. We're not going to let that happen. We're there now. And what people don't understand, but they understand as I say this, we're there now, but we're going to stay until such time as the proper transition can take place. So we're going to stay until such time as we're going to run it, essentially, until such time as a proper transition can take place. As everyone knows, the oil business in Venezuela has been a bust, a total bust for a long period of time. They were pumping almost nothing by comparison to what they could have been pumping and what could have taken place. We're going to have our very large United States oil companies, the biggest anywhere in the world, go in, spend billions of dollars, fix the badly broken infrastructure, the oil infrastructure, and start making money for the country. And we are ready to stage a second and much larger attack if we need to do so. So we were prepared to do a second wave if we needed to do so. We actually assumed that a second wave would be necessary, but now it's probably not. The first wave, if you'd like to call it that, the first attack was so successful, we probably don't have to do a second, but we're prepared to do a second wave, a much bigger wave, actually. This was pinpoint, but we have a much bigger wave that probably won't have to do. This partnership of Venezuela with the United States of America, a country that everybody wants to be involved with because of what we were able to do and accomplish, will make the people of Venezuela rich, independent, and safe. And it will also make the many, many people from Venezuela that are living in the United States extremely happy. They suffered. They suffered. So much was taken from them. They're not going to suffer anymore. the illegitimate dictator Maduro was the kingpin of a vast criminal network responsible for trafficking colossal amounts of deadly and illicit drugs into the United States. As alleged in the indictment, he personally oversaw the vicious cartel known as Cartel de las Soles, which flooded our nation with lethal poison responsible for the deaths of countless Americans, the many, many Americans, hundreds of thousands over the years of Americans died because of him. Maduro and his wife will soon face the full might of American justice and stand trial on American soil. Right now they're on a ship they'll be heading to, ultimately New York. And then a decision will be made, I assume, between New York and Miami or Florida. But we have people where the overwhelming evidence of their crimes will be presented in a court of law. And I've seen it. I've seen what we have. It's both horrible and breathtaking that something like this could have been allowed to take place. For many years after his term as president of Venezuela expired, Maduro remained in power and waged a ceaseless campaign of violence, terror, and subversion against the United States of America, threatening not only our people, but the stability of the entire region. And you all saw it. In addition to trafficking gigantic amounts of illegal drugs that inflicted untold suffering and human destruction all over the country, all over in particular the United States, Maduro sent savage and murderous gangs, including the bloodthirsty prison gang Tren de Aragua, to terrorize American communities nationwide. And he did indeed. They were in Colorado. They took over apartment complexes. They cut the fingers off people if they called police. They were brutal. But they're not so brutal now. And I just have to congratulate our military, Pete, and everybody, and our National Guard, because the job that they've done, whether it's in Washington, D.C., where we have a totally safe city, where it was one of the most unsafe cities anywhere in the world, frankly, and now we have no crime in Washington, D.C. We haven't had a killing. We had the terrorist attack a few weeks ago. A little bit of a different kind of a threat, but we haven't had a killing in a long period of time, 6-7 months. We used to have two, on average, two a week in Washington, our capital. We don't have that anymore. The restaurants are opening. Everyone's happy. They're going. They're walking their daughters. They're walking their children, their wives. They walk to restaurants. Restaurants are opening all over Washington, D.C. So I want to thank the National Guard. I want to thank our military. And I want to thank law enforcement. Been amazing. And they should do it with more cities. We're doing it, as you know, and we're doing it in Memphis, Tennessee right now, and crime is down. We've just sort of started a few weeks ago, but crime is down now 77%. And the governor of Louisiana called, great person, and he wanted us to help him, as you know, in a certain very nice part of Louisiana. And we have done that, and it was a rough section, and we have crime down. I understand it's down to almost nothing already after 2.5 weeks. New Orleans, it's down to almost nothing, and we've only been there for 2.5 weeks. Can't imagine why governors wouldn't want us to help. We also helped, as you know, in Chicago, and crime went down a little bit there. We did a very small help because we had no working ability with the governor. The governor was a disaster and the mayor was a disaster, but it knocked down crime. But we're pulling out of there. When they need us, we'll know. You'll know. You'll be writing about it. And likewise, Los Angeles, where we saved Los Angeles early on, where the head of the police department made a statement that if the federal government didn't come in, we would have lost Los Angeles. That's long after the fires. That's when they had the riots in Los Angeles. We did a great job. Got no credit for it whatsoever, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. We don't need the credit. But we'll be pulling out when they need us. They'll call, or we'll go back if we have to. We'll go back. But we did a great job in various cities. But the place that we're very proud of is Washington, D.C., because it's our nation's capital. We took it from being a crime-ridden mess to being one of the safest cities in the country. But the gangs that they sent raped, tortured, and murdered American women and children. They were in all of the cities I mentioned, Trinidad, Aragua. And they were sent by Maduro to terrorize our people, and now Maduro will never again be able to threaten an American citizen or anybody from Venezuela. There will no longer be threats. For years, I've highlighted the stories of those innocent Americans whose lives were so heartlessly robbed by this Venezuelan terrorist organization. Really one of the worst. One of the worst. They say the worst. Americans like 12-year-old Jocelyn Nungari from Houston. Beautiful Jocelyn Nungari. What happened to her? They, as you know, they kidnapped, assaulted, and murdered by Trinidad, Aragua animals. They murdered Jocelyn and left her dead under the bridge. There was a bridge that will never be the same to so many people after seeing what happened. As I've said many times, the Maduro regime emptied out their prisons, sent their worst and most violent monsters into the United States to steal American lives. And they came from mental institutions and insane asylums. They came from prisons and jails. The reason I say both, they sound similar. Actually, prisons, a little bit more hostile, a little bit tougher. A mental institution isn't as tough as an insane asylum, but we got them both. They sent from their mental institutions. They sent from their jails, prisons. They were drug dealers. They were drug kingpins. They sent everybody bad into the United States, but no longer. And we have now a border where nobody gets through. In addition, Venezuela unilaterally seized and stole American oil, American assets, and American platforms, costing us billions and billions of dollars. They did this a while ago, but we never had a president that did anything about it. They took all of our property. It was our property. We built it. And we never had a president that decided to do anything about it. Instead, they fought wars that were 10,000 miles away. We built Venezuela oil industry with American talent, drive, and skill, and the socialist regime stole it from us during those previous administrations, and they stole it through force. This constituted one of the largest thefts of American property in the history of our country. Considered the largest theft of property in the history of our country. Massive oil infrastructure was taken like we were babies, so we didn't do anything about it. I would have done something about it. America will never allow foreign powers to rob our people or drive us back into and out of our own hemisphere. That's what they did. Furthermore, under the now deposed dictator Maduro, Venezuela was increasingly hosting foreign adversaries in our region and acquiring menacing offensive weapons that could threaten U.S. interests and lives. And they used those weapons last night. They used those weapons last night, potentially in league with the cartels operating along our border. All of these actions were in gross violation of the core principles of American foreign policy, dating back more than two centuries, and not anymore. All the way back, it dated to the Monroe Doctrines. And the Monroe Doctrine is a big deal. But we've superseded it by a lot, by a real lot. They now call it the Donroe Document. I don't know. It's Monroe Doctrine. We sort of forgot about it. It was very important, but we forgot about it. We don't forget about it anymore. Under our new national security strategy, American dominance in the Western Hemisphere will never be questioned again. Won't happen. So just in concluding, for decades, other administrations have neglected or even contributed to these growing security threats in the Western Hemisphere. Under the Trump administration, we are reasserting American power in a very powerful way in our home region. And our home region is very different than it was just a short while ago. The future will be, and we did this in my first term. We had great dominance in my first term, and we have far greater dominance right now. Everyone's coming back to us. The future will be determined by the ability to protect commerce and territory and resources that are core to national security. These are core to our national security. Just like tariffs are, they've made our country rich, and they've made our national security strong, stronger than ever before. But these are the iron laws that have always determined global power. And we're going to keep it that way. We will secure our borders. We will stop the terrorists. We will crash the cartels, and we will defend our citizens against all threats, foreign and domestic. Other presidents may have lacked the courage or whatever to defend America, but I will never allow terrorists and criminals to operate with impunity against the United States. This extremely successful operation should serve as warning to anyone who would threaten American sovereignty or endanger American lives. Very importantly, the embargo on all Venezuelan oil remains in full effect. The American Armada remains poised in position, and the United States retains all military options until United States demands have been fully met and fully satisfied. All political and military figures in Venezuela should understand what happened to Maduro can happen to them, and it will happen to them if they aren't just, fair, even to their people. The dictator and terrorist Maduro is finally gone in Venezuela. People are free. They're free again. It's been a long time for them, but they're free. America is a safer nation this morning. It's a prouder nation this morning because it didn't allow this horrible person and this country that was doing very bad things to us. It didn't allow it to happen. And the Western Hemisphere is right now a much safer place to be. So I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank General Raisin Kane. He's a fantastic man. I've worked with a lot of generals. I worked with some I didn't like. I worked with some I didn't respect. I worked with some that just weren't good. But this guy is fantastic. I watched last night one of the most precise attacks on sovereignty. I mean, it was an attack for justice. And I'm very proud of him, and I'm very proud of our Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, who I'm going to ask to say a few words. Thank you very much.
All right. We've been listening to President Donald Trump there, and this is his first press statement telling the world what is going on. He said a lot of things about what is going on, giving an update. And recall that Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela is being flown to the United States. And Donald Trump is saying that he's going to stand trial in New York alongside his spouse. And he said that he would be charged with narco-terrorism. And he said that Maduro was the head of a drug cell called the Sons. He also mentioned that the U.S. will run Venezuela until the judicial transition. Now, there's so many things, and certainly we'll be having guests as we get along to talk about all of those issues on the news as we get along. So Donald Trump posted this photo on social media, purporting to show Nicolas Maduro on board a U.S. Navy ship. Now, Trump said that the vessel was transporting Maduro and his spouse to New York for trial. Now, Donald Trump admits the U.S. is attempting to conduct regime change in Venezuela. And he insists that Washington will be involved in deciding the future of the South American country.
We're going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. So we don't want to be involved with having somebody else get in, and we have the same situation that we had for the last long period of years. So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. And it has to be judicious, because that's what we're all about.
Now we cross now live to Patrick Henningsen, independent journalist and founder of the news website 21st Century Wire. It's nice to have you join me right now, Patrick. We're watching this unfold like a movie, and unfortunately, this is real. Now, let me ask, Donald Trump says that the U.S. is going to run Venezuela. Oh, what do you think about that? Let me start from there.
It's an extraordinary statement. You know, one of the problems with this president is he doesn't seem to be in full command of his cognitive abilities, much like the previous president, which Donald Trump called Sleepy Joe. We've also got Sleepy Donald, where he might say 100 different things during a statement like this, but it's not backed up with any sort of concrete plans or anything that's tangible. I mean, just look at how he's conducting so-called peace negotiations with regards to the Middle East. I would put Ukraine in that category as well. Everything's just fluid. Everything's just kind of on the fly. So he's saying that the United States is going to take over a mid-sized country of Venezuela, the majority of which lean left and support Nicolas Maduro and the current government. I mean, how on earth are you going to do that without fomenting civil unrest, without sparking a civil war? Unless this is the plan, unless the plan of the U.S. government and the CIA is to foment a civil war in Venezuela. I think that's a legitimate question at this point. I think to not ask that question, I think it'd be hugely irresponsible based on what we've seen over the last 12 hours. I mean, this is completely unprecedented. To think that the U.S. government or this president has the interests of the Venezuelan people at heart after forcibly abducting an extraordinary rendition of a head of state of a U.N. member state, without showing any evidence over the last 3 months of this so-called narco-terrorist allegation, or that Nicolas Maduro is running Cartel de la Sol or Tren de la Agua, all these sort of brands that have been put out. And it's so funny that Joe Biden, Trump 1.0, about two terms of Obama and Bush, they never basically raised the talking point that Venezuela had stolen U.S. oil and U.S. property. So basically, this is just a fabricated kind of talking point that's been ginned up over the last couple of months in the first year of this administration to somehow justify what is a brazen act of aggression that violates international law, that violates U.S. treaties, that violates U.S. domestic law. I mean, this is a total violation of the 1973 War Powers Act, basically. You know, he didn't consent Congress. There's no specific statutory ruling by Congress. The United States is not under imminent threat of attack from Venezuela. He didn't consult Congress beforehand, nor the Senate Arms Committee. So this is an impeachable offense for Donald Trump. It's all based on allegations, as he even said, the alleged allegations in this indictment. What we're going to find in the coming months, and the reason they're shoving this into the Southern District of New York, is because this will take like 2 years. So Donald Trump might be out of office by the time this even comes to trial. And so, you know, and when it does, it's going to get torn to pieces, because again, if they had any evidence of this, it would have been all over the global media for the last 6 months. But because they don't have any evidence that he's the head of a drug cartel or that Venezuela stole U.S. oil, then what are these charges based on? It's nothing. It's rhetoric. It's rhetoric to, this is the equivalent of WMDs in Iraq. Basically the same fiction to justify what is clearly a power grab of critical resources of another country and regime change. And he's openly, more than any other previous U.S. administration, has come out and said, we're taking over the government. And if we don't like who's in power or anything they're doing or saying, we're going to take them out as well. He also threatened to take out the president of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, as well, in a Fox News interview just, you know, hours ago. So he's threatening other Latin American heads of state that they're next. He said, I quote, they're next. That's the threat he made to the Colombian president.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a lawless, reckless
exactly,
U.S.
Patrick,
administration.
Just to buttress what you're saying, Trump has also made threats against Mexico's president, saying drug cartels are running that country. And he's also called the Colombian president, like you have mentioned, he called him a drug dealer. Now, what scenarios are you looking at? He has gone into Venezuela and succeeded as far as he is concerned. Do you think all of these countries, he'll be so hungry to move in as well?
Yeah, well, the question is, who's going to restrain this this regime in Washington? It's not the Democrat Party. We saw Senator Mark Warner, who's basically terrified to actually do anything. He's saying, oh, I don't know if this is legal or not. You know, he's talking about the strikes on the drugs, the alleged drug boats in September. I mean, these are all these Democrat hawks that were running Russiagate impeachment for during Trump's first term. And they because they're on board. At the end of the day, the Democrats are fully on board with this imperialism. That's the problem here. MAGA is finished as a sort of political movement. And now we can see that Donald Trump ran on these MAGA principles and pretended to be an anti-war president to get the independent votes, because everybody knows if you get those independent votes, that's your ticket into power in Washington. But he clearly did not intend to abide by any of the things that he campaigned on, which is now the proof's in the pudding. This is a blatant regime change war. This is piracy, theft. This is the worst kind of regime change war, because he's threatening. It's an open-ended, continuous threat that if you don't allow us to install the leadership that we want, we're going to attack you again. Now, this could backfire on the president. But, you know, are other countries willing to stand up and fight the U.S. militarily? Of course not, because the United States has overwhelming force. So it's so funny that he's saying that, you know, he's quoting the Monroe Doctrine, which shows you that Donald Trump doesn't have a clue about history. The Monroe Doctrine was to prevent European powers from setting up shop and, you know, threatening the U.S. or impeding U.S. trade or commerce in their hemisphere. It wasn't something that was, it predated independent countries in the Western Hemisphere. So he's completely twisted the idea of the Monroe Doctrine, which was really, to keep the British out, if truth be told, after the War of 1812, to prevent European powers from recolonizing, if you will, things in the near abroad of the United States. But these are like tropes and fetishes that this administration likes to use. He's calling the iron law of international power. So we're now, forget about international law, forget about the rules-based international order. Now it's the iron law of international power, which is a Hobbesian state of nature, which is might makes right, that we will take what we want. And if any governments get in our way, we'll take out those heads of state. We'll kill people if necessary. And anything that is in our hemisphere. He accused Venezuela of kicking the U.S. or pushing the U.S. out of their own hemisphere. The Orwellian inversion here is unbelievable. The U.S. is attacking Venezuela. The U.S. has been sanctioning Venezuela. The U.S. has destroyed Venezuela's oil company. Donald Trump stole the Venezuelan assets of Citgo, the Venezuelan state oil company, in his first term, liquidated it, and handed it off to Juan Guaido and a bunch of other dubious, quote, opposition figures or people within the orbit of the Trump administration. So he's the one who stolen state assets of Venezuela himself during his first term. He's accusing, he's playing the victim. It's pretty breathtaking that they're going to try to pull this. But this doesn't even get into the fact that if it's about drugs, and again, all of these accusations Trump had rattled off during that incoherent speech that he just gave. He himself just pardoned one of the biggest drug traffickers ever sent down in a U.S. federal trial, Juan Orlando Hernandez, ex-president of Honduras, who was indicted for importing 400 or something odd, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of tons of cocaine into the United States. And Trump, on the order of an anonymous person who we don't know, told Trump to release him, to pardon this person, who was just sentenced to U.S. federal crimes in U.S. prison. Mm-hmm. So if it's about stopping the drug cartels or a war on drugs, why is he pardoning U.S. convicted oligarchs, you know, and drug cartel major actors? Why this is completely inconsistent.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to hold this.
That's a big question, because the point there is the world is watching what's going on, and it's really surprising how it is. I like the way you described it as like going back to the state of nature. You know, it was a dangerous times if we all read about all of these. Now, Maduro recently expressed willingness to negotiate with the U.S. Mm. Why did Trump choose war instead?
Well, this is an interesting point you bring up. This is the third time the Trump administration has used negotiations as cover for a sneak attack. The United States pulled the same tactic while pretending to negotiate with the Iranians. And during negotiations, or right on the eve of negotiations, the U.S. and Israel launched a sneak attack to try to take out the government of Iran. Okay, that's historic fact. And also, when the U.S. was mounting serious potential breakthrough negotiations between Russia and Ukraine around the same time, we're talking about June of this past year, Ukraine, with U.S. intelligence and British and European intelligence, launched Operation Spider's Web, a massive drone attack hitting Russia's nuclear deterrent. So and in this case, Maduro was trying to negotiate, and Trump is now publicly saying, I didn't listen to him. I didn't want to negotiate him with him. I closed negotiations and opted to attack, bomb Venezuela, and kidnap the president. So on three different occasions, the U.S. has used negotiations to mount a sneak attack against three different countries. If that's not a signal to everybody in the world that if you negotiate with this Trump administration, that you're doing so at your own risk, I don't know what is a clearer signal that's being sent here.
All right. Now we have to leave it here now. Thank you so much for the time we have discussed. I look forward to talking with you again on some of these issues as the issues develop. Patrick Henningsen, independent journalist and founder of the news website 21st Century Wire. Thank you so much.
Thank you.